felt good. That felt real good. I loved what I saw on Sunday. And it is the best way to open up the Pride of Detroit podcast, the PODcast. PrideofDetroit.com, at Pride of Detroit on Twitter, Pride of Detroit on Facebook. You know where to find us. The best, the brightest, the wittiest, and the whimsical here once again on our very own weekly podcast, the PODcast. I am Chris Lemieux, at Adequate Host. And joining me, as always, Jeremy Reisman, at Detroit Online, the fearless leader. And Ryan Matthews, back is the motherfucking rock god, at Ryan underscore POD. Jeremy, what'd you feel about Sunday?
I felt great. I mean, there are some people out there that think maybe you shouldn't take this much joy from your rival losing, but screw that. The Packers knocked us out of our first division title in 25 years. I am so happy to see them get creamed by the Falcons. Not even stand a chance in that game from the minute the kickoff started. It was glorious. Aaron Rodgers got benched. Aaron Rodgers got a face mask penalty. How could you have asked for a more Schadenfreude-filled game?
Ryan, is it okay to laugh at the expense of the Packers?
I mean, the embodiment of poetic justice was Aaron Rodgers getting his face mask penalty. I mean, as a Lions fan, just the optics of seeing Aaron Rodgers getting the call against him for the face mask penalty and then barely touching the defensive back and him putting both of his arms out as far as they can, wingspan length, and just falling back into the referee and trying to sell the little shoulder that, you know, Aaron gave him. Everything about Sunday was so great. Julio Jones is an alien. Like, Matt Ryan, I mean, if you're going to root for any quarterback, why not root for the one with the same first name as your wonderful, you know, franchise quarterback?
And they're buddies, too. They're good friends.
Look at that. And he has the last name Ryan. How could I not like a guy who has two first names?
He's basically the inverse of your name.
He is. Mirror World Ryan Matthews.
Yeah.
I think I'm with you. Like, Robert Alford flopping after getting, like, his helmet legitimately ripped off by a face mask, and then just throwing the flop on the end for good measure, that was perfect. That was beautiful. I don't even know how that happens. Like, I went into this game thinking the Packers, I mean, it's going to be the same old damn magic from these dumb Packers all the time. And I thought at first, okay, they had the missed field goal. They had the Ripkowski fumble. Bad luck there. Still in it, you know, down 17 or so, about to go into the half. Still doable. I mean, the Falcons have coughed up bigger leads before. And then that Julio Jones just to get it in there and put in 24 before the half. Like, it was buried at that point.
I don't want to say that was a better play than the Golden Tate play, so I'm just going to shut my mouth and not make that comparison at all whatsoever. But Julio Jones is, without a doubt, the best receiver in football. Like, I wanted to say that coming into this season, I definitely thought that Antonio Brown was a notch above him. But going on Snapface and what he did in that locker room last week really cost the Steelers, no? But in all sincerity, like, I think that Julio is just the fact that he did that with the toe injury. You know, we can get into, you know, the Jordy Nelson and his ribs and stuff and how much, you know, Toradol he must have been, you know, hopped up on. But man, what Julio is able to do out there on the field, it's so incredible. Like, I think that hands down, without a doubt, he's the best wide receiver in football.
Well, I wanted to bring this up, and maybe we can kick this right back to you, Ryan, because I saw a few fans, Lions fans, talking about this. This is the Lions' angle, is, like, where do you put Julio in comparison to the recently retired Calvin Johnson? Because I think they feel like kind of that same kind of athlete, just a very physical, very big receiver who can just go up there and just make incredible catches like that.
Yeah, I mean, there obviously are a lot of parallels. I mean, they're both big receivers who play outside the numbers, you know. I think what you see with Julio, though, is I just want to say that Julio's a little bit more physical than I think Calvin ever mm-hmm. really was. Calvin was such a, you know, a huge threat, and his ability to jump up and grab a ball, his ability to catch the ball and really just like move downfield in space was, you know, something that a lot of us hadn't seen, you know, at that point for a guy of his size. But Julio Jones is, I don't want to say he's like a mini version of Calvin, because he's six foot three. Yeah, he's still 6 foot three, still a big guy. But, you know, you just have to be absolutely just at, you know, just at awe with what he's able to do. And the fact that his real name is Quintoris.
Quintoris, and yet Julio, such a good name too.
Quintoris Lopez Jones.
So what do you feel about the Calvin Johnson stuff, like Julio Calvin Johnson? I'd gone on like some radio when Calvin Johnson retired, and like, you know, they had been talking about best receivers from this era, and they were talking about, you know, Calvin Johnson along with a name like T.O., but I kept throwing Julio in there because I'm like, yeah, I mean, I know he's a little younger. I think Julio's like a couple of years younger, I think. But again, those comparisons just always get me.
I mean, I hate to say it, but I think it's kind of fair. Like, he has that same ability to take over a game. And you see, when he's paired up with a quarterback who's, you know, on his game, like we saw Matthew Stafford towards the end of last year and kind of in that 2011 season, you know, it's a match made in heaven. It's a matchup that's almost impossible to stop. And I know that pains a lot of Lions fans to hear that, but you kind of look outside the scope of this team, and Julio has just as much impact as Calvin Johnson ever really made with the Lions, and he does all the things that Calvin can do. Maybe not quite the, you know, triple team catches or jumping up above everybody, but, you know, he certainly has his fair share of catches like that too. He really does. And I would, you know, mark them as 1A, 1B. These are two of the best receivers you'll ever really see play this game.
One last note on the Packers-Falcons game. Actually, kind of two, but, like, I don't think we've lingered long enough on the Packers getting their butts kicked. Like, I don't know. Have we seen anything good from JS comments today? Like,
thank you for reminding me. I sent out a tweet last night. I was like, hey, I cannot wait for JS comments. And I totally just forgot about it today.
That was an ass-whooping. I think I saw a stat that, like, the Packers hadn't actually been shut out in a half in playoff football since like for like 13 years, 14 years. I think the last time was like 2003 or something like that. So it's been a while. It's been a very long time. And the people that shut them out last time was the Falcons. So I don't know. Like, I feel good for the Falcons fans to get a win like that too, especially going to the Super Bowl, close out the George Dome in style. Arthur Blank looked like he was having a lot of fun. But I guess the question is then after that, do you believe in the Falcons?
Well, I just kind of want to say that, like, part of the enjoyment of that game to me was watching the Falcons win, because that's a franchise that I think a lot of Lions fans can kind of relate to. You know, they've only been to one Super Bowl, they lost it.
And they famously cursed and because of what happened the night before too. Yeah.
Right. And I don't know. You look at a quarterback like Matt Ryan, who's a guy who early in his career got a lot of credit, but had started to kind of fall off the national map after a while, after the young guns of last year kind of took hold, you know, your Andrew Lux and Cam Newton's, people kind of forgot about Matt Ryan, and I think a lot of Lions fans can relate to that, Matthew Stafford, and just kind of all of a sudden, he has one good year, now he's probably going to win MVP, now the team's they're in the Super Bowl, I'm not going to say they're probably going to win, because I don't know how you can count out the Patriots at any point right now, but it's just an exciting team with a high-flying offense that you kind of wish the Lions would have had during the years when Calvin was around, and either you're talking about the time when Nate Burleson was here or last year with Golden Tate. It's just a fun team to watch. It's a team that is exciting and draws a lot of parallels to the Lions. So that for them to be the one to take down the Packers, who just seemed like they were going to steamroll their way into the Super Bowl, that made it even better to me.
Did we find anything from JS comments, Ryan?
You bet we did. two tweets from today. Fire Ted Thompson, fire Capers, start over on defense, sell team to someone that will build a winner, and followed up by an even better tweet. They draft softer guys to fit in the Green Bay community / town, and that's fine for reading books to kids and photo ops, but sucks on the field.
Can they even sell the team? I thought that their big thing was like, we're owned by the fans. I thought that was like the big Green Bay thing. How can you sell, like...
Look, I don't know how you're supposed to make sense out of anything when you have, you know, a fan base that puts cheese on their heads. And
that's true.
And parades around.
Can we, like, make it a weekly segment to read comments from other people's fan bases just to kind of, like...
I'm
put everything
all for
in perspective
that.
Because... Sell the team is something that I always kind of imagined to just be a Lions thing because the Fords are the one constant of this losing franchise. But it makes me so happy to hear that that's a thing with almost every franchise,
I'm sure. Yeah, I'm all for it. I'm all for it. I know, like, one of my favorite things to read from the college blogs is over on Roll Bama Roll for the Alabama. They have This Week in Shot... No, wait. This Week in Schadenfreude was something different, but it's...
That was started by MGo Blog, right?
Yeah, MGo Blog was This Week in Schadenfreude. They brought it to SB Nation, and then Roll Bama Roll has, like, their own version that's just angry comments from the team that they beat down or something, or from elsewhere in the SEC. Like, it is... And, of course, when Alabama lose, they will always turn it on themselves. So, I am all for this. This sounds like a fantastic idea. All right, real quick note from the other game of the night, which, again, I didn't watch too much of... Steelers Packers. I was very tired. I was up in Detroit with Alex Reno and kind of got back, like, wasn't really feeling too well. But I mean, the Patriots are in. I don't know who all really put up much of a fight. I was very shocked at what happened with the Steelers, but I don't know, after watching the Chiefs fold up like that, like watching that Chiefs Steelers game, not really too surprised. But I don't know, what did you guys take away from that?
I just don't know who's going to stop the Patriots. I mean, I guess the Falcons are primed. To me, the thing that I took from these playoffs were that they actually got it right. Like, I think the two best teams from each conference are going to be playing in the Super Bowl. I don't think the Steelers were that good of a team. Obviously, they were good enough to get to where they were, but it doesn't help when Le'Veon Bell goes down two snaps into the game or whatever he did.
Yeah. Do you think the Cowboys would have been better than the Falcons?
No, okay. I don't think so. I think that team was not well set up for adversity. If the Cowboys fell behind, which they did in the game that they lost to the Packers, they weren't going to work their way back because they're not built to do that. They're not a team that can pass the ball 40 times and win. And if they would have played the Falcons, that's exactly what they would have had to do, I think. Because that wasn't a good defense either.
And real quick to your point too, Jeremy, yeah. I don't think that the Cowboys are a team that can score points quickly. Like they right. have to do like these like methodical drives down the field. Like they don't really have the ability to stretch the field with Prescott at this point. Like I mean, like right. that wasn't it's just early. Part of their MO. They weren't gonna go vertical to Dez Bryant unless they were desperate.
Right, and yeah. their style of play would be very very. Conducive to winning if they had a good defense. If they could hold teams to long drives themselves, they could wear their defense out, kind of wear, you know, work a team into long defensive drives and offensive drives, make them work for it and beat them with the ground game, but their defense just wasn't that good. But I don't know why we're talking about the Cowboys.
Yeah,
they're not in it.
Well, the only note I really want to bring up from the Patriots game was... Once again, it's a former Lion, and every time this happens, people lose their damn minds. Kyle Van Noy made several plays in the game on Sunday night.
It's tough because it is. I'll be honest; it's frustrating to see.
Well, I
wish Van Noy the best. I want him to succeed, but it's frustrating to see a guy that you let go for less than a sixth round pick succeed immediately He already has made more plays in, what, 6 games with the Patriots than he ever did with the Lions. That's frustrating to watch. I completely understand everyone's frustrations with that.
It's frustrating, but I want to address that because at the same time, it's like, yeah, it's unbelievably frustrating to watch him play, but, like, no one was clamoring here in Detroit among the fans for Kyle Van Noy to see the field. No one thought that at all because they knew what they were going to get out of Kyle Van Noy here. Like, and they didn't want that. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. So it's kind of like, okay, then the only good outcome is if he goes somewhere else and doesn't and continues to not succeed. I don't know. I don't know what to make of the situation, Ryan.
Well, I think the one thing that you want to do is you want to look to history and you kind of want to look at what's going on with Kyle Van Noy right now in New England, and you want to look forward to April during the draft, and you don't want to be drafting players that are, you know, round players that you're trying to fit into square holes, you know? So this is a very early warning in the offseason. You don't want Tim Williams. Like, you don't want another profile for a guy who is a 3-4 linebacker, who isn't a guy who's going to, who hasn't, you know, shown that he has the ability to really put his hand in the dirt and play the 4-3 defensive end. You don't want to relive this. You don't want Kyle Van Noy again. And I'm not saying, I'm not equating their skills or their abilities to one another, but I'm equating their fit with the team and with the defense. And, but bringing it back a little bit to New England and Pittsburgh, and I think that, you know, Jeremy said we got the two best teams, and I really agree with that. Like, you have, and I mean, what better matchup would you really want, I think, out of the teams that made the playoffs? Because you have Atlanta, who has, you know, probably one of the top 5 offenses of all time. Like, it's kind of weird to say that, but, like, this offense is so diverse, and it comes back to something that, you know, we were talking about Kelvin Johnson earlier, and, you know, how it can be a little bit frustrating to think, well, you know, what could have been, you know, if Calvin and Stafford would have kind of had like a season like this. The big difference is that the Atlanta Falcons were 5th in rushing.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, that's the right. I mean, that's the big difference, is that there hasn't been a rushing game here in, you know, 20 years. And it's just, that's the difference.
And not only that too, like, I mean, what was it last year? Devonta Freeman was the big name. Now this year it was Tevin Coleman.
Yeah, I mean,
like, you're able to kind of, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you have a two-headed monster in the backfield. And personally, I think Tevin Coleman's he's the better runner of the two. Devonta Freeman is a little bit just, I mean, he's just so versatile. Like, he's so just important for what that offense is able to accomplish. You know, his skill set. But having both those guys in the backfield is invaluable to them.
All right, I think we should just leave it there. We will keep talking about this. We've got, again, 2 weeks until the Super Bowl, so we'll have plenty of time to keep digging through this. So
let's we'll do 3 segments on Kyle Van Noy next week.
Sure, why not? Why not? The Kyle Van Noy cast, yeah. This, by the way, is the petty cast, because we spent so much time talking about the Packers and the Falcons, but let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to be talking a little bit of the Lions again. We're going to do kind of a review of one of the units from this year, defensive backs. So your cornerbacks, your safeties, and we're just going to talk about them. We're going to talk about what was, what is, what is going to be. So, and then later on the show, talking about the Senior Bowl. So stick around. All right, continuing along here on the Pride of Detroit podcast, PODcast, we were kind of trying to figure out what, it's a long off season, and we're still figuring out, I think, a little bit of what we're doing. We know we wanted to do some, like, we're going to be doing a bunch of list cast stuff later on. We kind of teased you with one very good one over last week. And I think now we should probably do a first of a segment. We just want to do kind of a Lions review on what the team was this year. We'll probably do these through February leading up to free agency. But I think we wanted to start, Jeremy, you wanted to start with talking about defensive backs because you read something very nice, I think, on MLive. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. So the fellows over at MLive, Kyle Meinke and Nate Atkins, they did a review of the positions. They're doing like grades for each position. And I think defensive back is an interesting one to talk about because the general gist that we get from the defensive backs is that they were horrible, right? The Lions gave up the highest completion percentage of all time for an entire season. And in general, the pass defense was awful. But they kind of had a different outlook on it. They actually gave the group, I think, a B and a B plus. And I think that's worth talking about a little bit and actually giving it some serious thought, because I think if you kind of look beyond just the statistical issues with the team, I think I can kind of agree with their outlook, to be honest, because I'm looking at a guy like Darius Slay. I thought he had a pretty darn good year. Little rough early in the year, but he rebounded really nicely, had a couple really, really big plays for the team. Mostly shut down number one receivers. We didn't really get blown up by any number one receivers all year. And then you look at the safety play, I thought Tavon Wilson had an excellent year. I think a lot of people overlooked that. Glover Quinn was absolutely fine. No real problems there. Where you had issues then, I think, were the second cornerback, Nevin Lawson, who I thought played okay. I saw him in a position to make a lot of plays this year, but he, you know, someone would either make a miraculous catch or he would, you know, turn his head just at the wrong moment. And then obviously slot receivers kind of tore this team apart. But I want to talk to you guys about it. Let you guys give your opinions. Do you think the cornerbacks were as bad as the stats kind of gave them out to be?
I don't really know the stats, to be honest. I'm just thinking. I think you're right when you say Darius Slay was, like, there was no number one receiver burning us, at least when Darius Slay was playing. But I think it's interesting you bring up kind of at the last point the corner, I mean, the nickel corners. Because I thought that was kind of like the one thing that once Quandre Diggs went out, like the whole thing just kind of fell apart because there was just no one to plug that hole. And I know Quandre Diggs isn't really the best, you know, nickel corner out there, but it's also a tough position to play. And everyone else after him was just kind of being thrown into that furnace between, what was it, Don Carey, Johnson Batamasi. Who else do we have trying to play nickel corner?
Asa Jackson, mm-hmm, Cresden Butler, mm-hmm. Really ran the gamut. Alex Carter, yeah, had a brief cameo.
That's another interesting thing, because I was looking up most of the roster in terms of like contracts, because again, free agency coming up soon, and it's interesting you mention a lot of this, because there are, by my count, just among corners, there are like four corners that are free agents in this free agency period, and even more that will be like unrestricted free agents after 2017, including let's see here, Nevin Lawson, Johnson Batamasi, and I haven't even gotten to the safeties yet, which, like, I mean, pick your poison there. So there is quite a bit of room, I think. Oh, here we go. In the safety, so you got Glover Quinn, Tavon Wilson are both up in 2017. Rafael Bush is up this year. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what general manager Bob Quinn wants to do, because if he wants to, he can just completely overhaul a lot of the depth on this team right now. I don't know what you're going to get on the market for secondary, but it is kind of a curious little point there, because the only real big piece you have locked up is Darius Slay, and I think Quandre Diggs is the only one going out to, like, what, 2018?
Yeah, and, you know, I think you find Quandre Diggs as being a replacement-level nickel corner. You know, yes. It wouldn't completely kill me to see him replaced, but it wouldn't exactly, you know, bother me if he returned and he was healthy. Like, mm-hmm. It wouldn't sway my opinion of this backfield. And, you know, my opinion of the secondary, I thought that they played rather well. I mean, if you look at, you know, Pro Football Focus, most of the secondary graded out pretty well. Darius Slay with an 83.4 player grade, Nevin Lawson with a 77.1 player grade. Both of those guys both finished in the top 40 ranked among corners. I think Darius Slay finished 18th among 118 qualifying corners, and Nevin Lawson was 38th. So, I mean, if you have, you know, if your second string corner is in the top 40, you're set at corner, right? Like, I mean, mm-hmm. you're pretty good. I mean, the main problem with the Lions secondary was that there wasn't any push up front. And I think we can all kind of agree that, you know, getting pressure on the quarterback is so incredibly key in, you know, just having the rest of the defense work in terms of, if you're getting push up front, your corners, there isn't as much, you know, pressure being put on them. We saw that a lot in the 2014 season with, you know, Sue and Fairley and, you know, everybody that was a part of that line with Ansa. Those guys were able to really create a lot of, you know, they were able to take a lot of the pressure off the cornerbacks. Now, if you look at Football Outsiders, where the Lions were really killed was in the short immediate area on the field. Like, they were dead last in defensive efficiency in the short parts of the field, plus 15.1%. Like, the team that was 31st was 11.6%. So, I mean, the difference there is huge, 4%. And that was Indianapolis, and we know how bad their secondary was. I don't think that you would say Detroit's secondary was anywhere close to you know, where Indianapolis's secondary was. So it was really a linebacker problem, right? In terms of coverage, well, guys.
Let me ask you then, Ryan, just kind of as a quick follow up, both in the pressure and both in the ability for the corners and second and defensive backs to create pressure and kind of the short passes. Do you place any hope in Miles Killebrew kind of becoming part of that solution down the road?
I'm not sure if that's part of his skill set. You know, we've seen a little bit of it, but I think that he's probably going to be best relegated to being a really good matchup against tight ends or bigger slot or bigger slot receivers that maybe line up closer to the line. I'm not sure if he'll ever be like a, you know, a middle of the field safety or anything like that. I don't think that's who he'll be, but I mean, we definitely, you know, we saw flashes of it, right? Of him on, you know, making good plays on third down against specifically, you know, most often tight ends. But Jeremy, I heard you start to chime in. I mean, where do you think the Lions stand to improve in their coverage if it's not their secondary?
Well, yeah, I think you hinted at it there, and it's this defense really failed on all levels, I think, because of linebacking first. And I think by design, this defense was set up to allow that short underneath stuff. Generally speaking, because the secondary is actually filled with a lot of good tacklers, I would say. I don't think there's anyone in that secondary that would rank among the top half of the league, even in broken tackles. And you saw guys like Tavon Wilson, like Miles Killebrew at times, make some really big tackles when they needed to. The linebackers, on the other hand, they were nowhere to be found in the passing game or really the running game.
And they had a lot of broken tackles too. Yeah.
And so those small passes over the middle of the field that were supposed to get them into like third and shorts would end up giving them first downs, or, you know, they'd convert on a third and eight because the linebacker was a second late in getting to where he needed to be. That being said, I think Chris brings up a good point, because we don't know what this secondary is going to look like down the line. I don't think the secondary needs to look that different next year, to be honest. I think I'm okay with Darius Slay returning as a one, Nevin Lawson returning as the two, and even maybe Quandre Diggs, if he's fully healthy by the time training camp rolls around, to be the slot guy. In terms of safety play, Tavon Wilson and Glover Quinn, played. They both, as a group, they exceeded my expectations.
So I guess I'm fine with it there.
But they do have to start thinking about the future, right? Because Glover Quinn is 31. You have to think about Quandre Diggs perhaps not working out, because even though the Lions defense clearly got worse with him gone, it wasn't that great with him in the game. So I'm interested to see where they'll go in the secondary in the draft if they do at all. A lot of people are talking about cornerback as a top three need. I don't think that's the case.
Well, what about strong safety? Like, I'm just kind of looking here. So before we leave the safeties too much, Raphael Bush, again, his contract's up. I don't know what you'd want to do with him. I thought I didn't really... I would not be torn up if he leaves, I guess, is where I have him. I don't... What did PFF really have Raphael Bush as? Do you remember, Ryan?
Well, I do know that Glover Quinn had an 82.1 grade and Tavon Wilson had an 82.6 grade. So both of those guys finished in the top 23 among safeties. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they were a fine tandem. Bush provided you with, I think, replacement level depth. He had a 73.3 grade. And I think he was even better in coverage than he was in run defense. And I think that probably, you know, marginally better, but... I think that probably goes without saying with the couple of interceptions that he had. But yeah, I mean, would I be torn up to see Bush go? Not really. I really wouldn't. But I think that he provides a little bit of depth. But at the same time, are you worried about him taking snaps away from Miles Killebrew and kind of his development or progression?
And then the other place I have kind of questions is at that strong safety position. So I don't know what to do with it. Like, overall, because I know Glover is traditionally free safety, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, Tavon Wilson took almost all the snaps at strong safety this year, and I would expect him to next year. And then I guess at this point I'm expecting Miles Killebrew to take over Raphael Bush's role. You know, he would get somewhere around 30 snaps or 30% of snaps a game. I could see Miles Killebrew easily stepping into that in his second year and, you know, maybe even for the future, taking over the strong safety position if they don't decide to keep Tavon Wilson beyond next year.
Well, can I ask a question real quick about cornerback in terms of being you know, in order of importance, you know, for this team in the offseason, do you think that it's absolutely imperative that they draft a corner in the first three rounds? Do you think it's important that they go out and they sign an AJ Bouye or a Logan Ryan or I mean, where does it rank in terms of importance for the offseason needs for the Lions?
I think that's going to depend on free agency, because again, I read you out all those guys who might be hitting the open market. So either you want to bring a lot of them back, or you do need to think about a signing or two, or a draft pick. Like it is. If Bob Quinn is serious about depth, you've got, I think Jeremy pointed out, you've got your top level guys all set, but you do need some semblance of depth for corner.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I really don't see this as a need in the first 2 days of the draft. I think this is more of a depth issue.
Maybe late second day.
Maybe, yeah.
It's a deep class for corners.
And you have to remember, that's a position where a lot of people think you're not going to get any production for the first 2 years. Right. So if you decide to draft someone at the top of the draft, don't expect him to start right away opposite Darius Slay. Or if he does, don't accept him to be, you know, a shutdown corner on the other half of the field. I'd like to see them go out in free agency like they did at safety last year and just kind of get a whole bunch of depth, because the guys that they got at corner last year were mostly focused on special teams. You know, you got like Johnson Batamosi. But once those guys jumped into a defensive role when injuries started happening, that's when things started to go downhill really quick. So I'd like to see some replacement level guys brought in through free agency. I don't have any specific names to throw out at you, but I don't see this as a top three, maybe not even a top five need for this team right now.
And I really think that at the end of the day, the Lions are, I think they're set with Slay and I think they're set with Lawson. I think that you need to find guys, like Jeremy said, that provide depth at that nickel corner spot, because you're unsure of Quandre Diggs' health. And when the Lions face injuries, that's where they got killed, right? That was mm-hmm. the Asa Jacksons. Mm-hmm. That was the Kresdon Butlers. That was, you know, the linebackers having to pick up the three safety looks that, you know, helped the team but also hurt them at the same time. You just need more depth at that position. And, you know, whether or not that gets addressed through free agency or the draft will, you know, remains to be seen. Long offseason.
Sure, absolutely. Let's take a quick break here when we come back. Time to start thinking of some drafting. We're going to kind of retouch on a couple more of these issues, but talking about the draft and talking about the Senior Bowl, which I think is kind of the new inter-Super Bowl break bowl to really be watching. Forget about the Pro Bowl. Forget about the Shrine game. It's the Pro Bowl, but we'll talk about it next. All right, continuing along here, Pride of Detroit podcast. Real quick note about the Pro Bowl. It's happening next week. That's it.
By the time you hear us next week, you're going to hear about Matt Prater's MVP performance.
Kicking all them goals. All of them.
At least two onside kicks. I'd like to see him throw a pass, too.
Fake field goal try. Yeah, I like this idea.
Just make sure you don't get Sean Taylor'd out there.
Jeez. I'm sorry, I can't do the Pro Bowl anymore. And I from what I understand, like, no one wants to do it anyway because it's in Orlando. That is a very big drop off versus Hawaii. It's like, hey, we're going to Orlando. Kids, we're taking you to Disney World and nowhere else. Nothing else.
And guess where WrestleMania is going to be this year?
Is it in Orlando?
Yeah, it's in Orlando.
Oh, damn. That's even worse than like where the Royal Rumble is this year.
Tracy, I'm not going to say anything bad about Orlando. Don't worry. It's my brother-in-law. Wait, he lives in Orlando.
Oh, I was about to say, who's Tracy? Who's Tracy? Because that could be a girl's name here. Getting you in trouble.
No.
Okay, but for real, like, where do we want to rank East-West Shrine Game, which just happened this weekend, which generated absolutely zero buzz, the Pro Bowl, and the Senior Bowl? How would you rank these games? These are kind of our waiting for the Super Bowl games, right?
I view the East-West Shrine Game and the Pro Bowl, and the Senior Bowl is kind of equivalent, but no one pays attention to the East-West Shrine Game because it's right in the middle of the playoffs.
That's why nobody cares about the Pro Bowl, because it's right in the middle of the playoffs.
Well, but at least it's on the Sunday, you know? And, I mean, I know this is going to catch a lot of flack, but I just...
Yeah, you're
just
defending the Pro Bowl, Jeremy.
I don't care about the draft this early. It's 3 months away, so I'll probably begrudgingly watch the Senior Bowl, but I don't have, you know, my slate of rookies that I love yet. It's way too early. I'm still mourning over the Lions loss. So yeah, I'm probably going to watch the Pro Bowl and enjoy that a little more. I'm sorry, I am.
Ryan, how are you taking this?
How am I taking what Jeremy's saying?
Well, just the rankings of the three games. What you want to watch?
Well, first of all, I kind of want to just say that I'm indifferent to what Jeremy has to say. Because I'm just generally indifferent to all three of these games. I don't know. If you want to rank one that's probably the most important, it's the Senior Bowl, right?
Yeah, it is. I will concede that for sure.
Because you get to see some of the best talent playing against each other all in one game.
I wouldn't say best. A lot of like first rounders end up not playing in this game for various reasons.
Sure, but you're going to see a lot of guys that end up late day one and day two for sure.
Yeah. Absolutely. These guys tend to go a little higher than a lot of the guys in the Shrine game, I seem to find.
Yep.
Absolutely. Like, I know at the same time, too, again, you don't get everything. Like, I know, what was the big thing today? Deshaun Watson was approached by the Browns, who told him that they wanted to see him play in the Senior Bowl, and he said, no thanks. And I don't know if that's a bad deal for either party there. I really don't. Deshaun Watson gets to avoid playing in a silly, you know, college all-star exhibition game, and as Ryan will gladly point to you, the Browns don't need Deshaun Watson with that number one pick.
And they shouldn't take a quarterback with that number one pick. That'd be such a Browns move. Don't do that. Be better than that, dog pound. I'm looking out for you. You signed Jamie Collins today, yesterday, by the time you hear this podcast. You're doing some right things, okay? Let's keep things going in the right direction.
Stay on the straight and narrow.
Don't fall in love with Mitch Trubisky, please. Just don't don't do anything insane now. But the weird thing about all these games, aren't you kind of just watching them and you're hoping nobody gets hurt? Like, that's the main, you're watching it and you're like, oh, I hope nobody gets hurt and ruins their draft stock or ruins the chance that they could start the season healthy next year in the NFL.
Like, honestly, that's kind of how I feel about a lot of college bowl games now, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
that's
weird.
That's why some people are skipping out on it, man. It's weird. But I don't know. I'm really trying to force myself to get into this draft stuff. So I'm going to try and see the appeal of the Senior Bowl this year. Practices start on Tuesday. So today, by the time you're listening to this, we'll pay attention to the reports. We'll try to pull some coverage on it on the site. But I know, Chris, you have a list of players that you're looking for. You want to talk about them for a little bit?
Sure, I do. And I just say on the Pro Bowl, on the Senior Bowl, I guess that this kind of marks the start of the draft season for me. I don't care as much about the Shrine Game. I don't care as much about all the stuff before it. And I know people get hyped up about the Combine, but I'd rather see live practice. And for a lot of these guys, they actually get NFL staff, coaching staffs to run these games. Now, obviously, in the past few years, it's been guys like, say, Gus Bradley, who just got his ass canned. So it's not exactly the best coaching staff out there, but, again, this probably meant a little more to me when I was still watching a ton of college football, but I do have a bunch of names here. And these are names probably, just real quick, just names. I don't have a ton of data on them. Maybe you might see them in our previews, but I was just kind of looking all over go on.
I was just going to say, before you get into this, I kind of want to talk on the Combine thing that you mentioned there. I am much more intrigued about the Senior Bowl than I am the Combine, because the Combine to me seems like a little bit of a fraud.
It is.
I'm sure Ryan can appreciate this comparison. It feels like students preparing for standardized testing.
Yes. Yes.
SAT. You're not learning the game. People are just specifically, working out to get a good 40 time rather than any sort of real athletic ability. I mean, obviously there's still some athletic ability in there, but it's, to me, the Senior Bowl, these guys are going to be amped to play this game, and they're going to be playing hard, and you'll be able to see what they're like at their best in football. Maybe not in terms of how well they're coached, like you were touching on there, Chris, but, I'm much more excited to see them amped up in a game situation than to see them after months and months of training to run fast.
I enjoy your analogy because I am employed.
All right, let's get to some of these names. So I've got a bunch here. I'm just going to run down the list. Just certain positions, I think. I mean, we haven't even talked about what we think the Lions should be drafting number in the first round. So I just went with it. What?
Defensive end.
Defensive end? All right, let's start on defensive ends then. So I know Myles Garrett from Texas A&M, all people are just gassed up on him. Might want to take a look at the guy, the other one that was lining up opposite him, Deshaun Hall, Texas A&M. He'll be here. Jordan Willis, I know, is also projected to be pretty late, probably late first day or so. Jordan Willis from Kansas State. And then I always love getting these guys from FCS schools because I have no clue who they are. And I had to look up this. And it doesn't help, too, that this guy had to look up his name. So you want to have two defensive ends that have kind of unusual names to go along with Ezekiel Ansah. Try this. You can see how it's spelled on the rundown, Jeremy. But his name is pronounced Tano Passigno.
Nope, this is my guy. This is my guy. I'm all in. I want him so bad.
Yeah. He's out of Villanova, and CBS basically says, quote, he might be the best prospect out, most exciting prospect out of Villanova since, quote, the Eagles selected Brian Westbrook. So, I mean, that's pretty high praise there.
I'm all in. I'm all in because his wingspan, he's 6'7", and his wingspan is at least 7'2". Like if you look at a picture of him with his hands at his side, his fingertips are right below his kneecaps. All of his measurables make you just gush. I'm all about this guy at some point in the draft.
Could be your sleeper, huh?
I mean, not only a sleeper for football reasons, but a sleeper in the name tournament. Come on.
Yeah. CBS projects him in the third round, so I mean he could be a late first day, early second day pick. You might not even need to spend a first rounder on him. So let's see what else we got here. linebacker. I know one of our readers is very gassed up on one particular Alabama linebacker. I'm not talking about Tim Williams, though. I'm going to be talking about Ryan Anderson. He's playing in this game, outside linebacker. Check him out. We were just talking about the backfield. Let's talk about some of the backfield. We've got Desmond King from Iowa, probably one of the top, the higher cornerbacks in this draft that is a very deep draft for corners. Tre'Davious White, also from LSU, want to keep an eye on him. And then safeties. Who doesn't like safeties? We like safeties. Another guy from Texas A&M, Justin Evans. You want to keep your eye on him. And then another FCS player, Lorenzo Jerome from St. Francis. Apparently, he's actually, CBS actually grades him higher. Both of them are, both these guys are kind of like late second round, mid third round picks. But, you know, just, you're not going to get a ton of first rounders playing in the Senior Bowl. And then finally, I don't know how you guys feel about tight ends, so I was kind of looking for a couple of tight ends who are going to be very late rounder picks in case the Lions want to get them something there. Gerald Everett from South Alabama, and then Mike Roberts from Toledo, my hometown. But this guy, Mike Roberts, is 6'5", 270 pounds.
If he can block, I'm all about him joining the team.
Yeah, and not only could he block, but he was like one of, he had an amazing amount of touchdown catches too. In MAC, but sure, yeah.
I do think tight end's a need. I don't know who on the roster besides Eric Ebron is even guaranteed to be on the team next year. I don't know if there's anybody.
That's a really good point because, yeah. I mean, even some of the promise that Cole Wick showed, he's clearly one-dimensional. You don't really have a guy who fits in as a traditional blocking tight end. So, I mean, you would have to think that maybe rounds 5, 6, 7 at some point, you're going to, you know.
Second day, third day, yeah. They've got to take at least one tight end.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, was there anyone else? Speaking of that, there are at least, let's see here, I'm counting. There are 7 guys here from Michigan, just for all you maize and blue guys out there. No one from Michigan State, though. But plenty of guys from Michigan, so if you are a guy like Jeremy, you probably want to watch this, because I know, let's see here, who else is going here? Ryan Glasgow is playing, Amara Darbo is playing, Devion Smith.
Yeah, so, there's been a lot of Devion Smith buzz happening as of late. I think he played in the East-West Shrine game too, actually.
Chris Wormley, a defensive end from Michigan.
I don't want to make, you know, too big of a deal out of this, but the other day Wally told me that Smith reminds him of Le'Veon Bell. I don't know why.
Mm. Not just because of the name?
It's the name. I mean, I'm going to watch the Senior Bowl. I think I've decided right now. I'll watch the Senior Bowl, and I'm going to be watching it with one thing in mind. I want to see a defensive playmaker, because that is the number 1, 2, 3, and 4 need of this Lions team right now is a defensive playmaker. So
sure,
whoever's out there making plays, sign them up for me.
All right. Want to leave it there? Do you have anything else you guys want to say about the Senior Bowl? Ryan, Jeremy?
Can you say how many Michigan State players are going to be in there again? I want to hear it again.
The player that I am looking forward to seeing play the most is Ben Boulware, because, I love his tattoo that he got on his Achilles of the college football championship trophy.
Wait, really?
Yeah, because was it Desmond Howard? Oh yeah, that's right. A former Michigan player pointed out that the linebackers were the Achilles heel of Clemson. So Ben Boulware, the bro, went out and got a tattoo of the college football playoff trophy tattooed on his Achilles.
He's got quite the beard, too. That is a remarkable beard he has.
You're the beard.
All right, let's go on to the mailbag.
Mail time.
The mail's here.
Here's the
the mail. It never fails. It makes me want to wag my tail. When it comes, I want to wail.
All right, mailbag time. Before we get there, though, we always read your reviews for the Pride of Detroit podcast on iTunes.
We finally have our first reviews of 2017.
First reviews of 2017. We are up to 35 ratings now. Keep continuing up here. And what was that thing that you showed me earlier? Was that you, Ryan, Jeremy, which one? In related podcasts, top podcasts and professionals? Like what company it's showing us near?
I was pretty bored at work, and I was checking out the reviews of our wonderful podcast on iTunes, and under the professional, because we are listed as a professional podcast, if you click on the related
professional sports,
right?
Professional sports.
Yeah. Well, when you click on related, more in professional sports, the top three hits are The Herd with Colin Cowherd, Bill Simmons' The Ringer podcast, and Skip and Shannon's Undisputed.
Just the trifecta. Shut us down now. Christ.
I think after this podcast, I might go write a mock review as if I was Wally on the Skip and Shannon podcast.
I was going to say, is the fact that we just mentioned Wally so much, is that why we're related to Skip Bayless?
Maybe.
Paul!
All right. Your new reviews. One is here, our 5-star review, Whose Lion Is It Anyway, from Dildo Baggins. A knowledgeable NFL outsider, Reisman, an employed adult who believes he is a pro wrestler, Matthews, spelled with two T's.
Asshole.
A damp sponge with mono, Reno. And a forgetful blind man, Lemieux, attempt to rationalize their youth enthusiasm for one of the most futile teams in all of sports. 5 stars.
Oh, thank you, anonymous person who I definitely don't know.
Thank you, Dildo Baggins. That is an image of Reno, too. And he's not here to defend himself.
Damn sponge with mono.
That's perfect. Let's read the other one, though.
I love that these have just become roasts of ourselves.
I was going to say, hold on, I have a question. Can sponges be carriers of mono? I don't know. How does that virus
isn't
work?
Mono is like saliva?
Mononucleosis? I guess. I don't know.
No. Have you never had mono?
Yeah, I have had mono. I just called the disease. It's the kissing disease, right? Yeah.
Yeah, the saliva. It's from saliva. Yeah. So we can probably carry it.
Dr. Bilbo Baggins would probably know because he is a doctor.
Dr. Bilbo Baggins?
Oh,
Dildo Baggins. Very important.
Let me correct
Not
you,
Bilbo,
okay?
Dildo. All right.
Jeremy.
Next review.
Is Jeremy going to read the second one or is Chris?
Jeremy, do you want to read the second one? I thought I was going to read all these, but Jeremy, you go ahead.
Okay. Sure. It's from Lions Fan 2017, a 3-star review.
A listener 2487, but the review name is Lions Fan 2017, so he clearly got confused.
Could be improved by breaking into more focused segments. It's not uncommon for the host and guests to get pretty far off topic. So far, so right. Not gonna lie, but that's what a podcast is. All right. If you don't like the loose format, listen to Sports Talk Radio, I guess. I also hope that given how often they use a song by Rage Against the Machine, that they have properly licensed it. Quote or parenthesis. I doubt it. Unparenthesis. No comment. If you disagree that they should need to license it properly, ask yourself if you're a professional musician. If the answer to that question is no, you don't know what you're talking about. Okay. If he's down in us 2 stars because he's a musician and he's bitter, sure, whatever, I'll take that. But
we are extremely licensed. Very licensed. Just the best licenses you can imagine.
I know all the music license there. They
I know
love
all
us.
The music licenses. They love us. Folks, we have the best music licenses in the world.
But let me put a call out to listeners. If this does bother you, and find if it does, why don't you help us out? If there's anyone musically inclined, we'd love some themes. You could do the mailbag theme. You could do an intro theme. You could do a Rage Corner theme. You could do an end theme. Maybe mix in a little Africa or something. If you mix music, throw in some remixes, that would be awesome.
We are currently trying to figure out a Listcast theme. That is like something Listcast in my production theme. Notes. But even if it's just not music, we're looking also for like voices, and we need to do something more than just music bringing us in. It's like you are listening. We had it in the hidden track last week. You are listening to the Pride of Detroit podcast. Stuff like that.
Yeah, things so if any of you are musically inclined, you could even take shit that we say and turn it into some sort of remix. I don't know. I'm just throwing ideas out there. It's sure. The off season, guys. If you have as little to do as we do right now, why not give us a little hand? Make us a little theme song. We'd be endlessly appreciative. And you would also easily get the most notorious title you could ever get, and that's Friend of the Show.
Or apparently, and this is where we're going to start our mailbag, Enemy of the Show. Josh LaFond asks, is my Enemy of the Show status for life or seasonal? Hashtag Crispity Crunchity.
Oh, man.
Ryan, you're the one who gave him this, so why don't you answer?
No.
It was Jeremy. It was Jeremy. I'm sorry.
Yes. It was Jeremy who gave Josh this, I don't even know what kind of adjective we want to use to describe how he earned this title. So dubiously earned this title? That's fine with me. We'll go
sure,
with that.
Sure, yeah.
Man, I don't know. Do we have a review board committee? I think we should. I think that it'll be seasonal. And
well, let's just say he's not up for parole now that he used that hashtag for another couple months.
Hold on, that's just one board member's vote. I think that we should put this all up to a vote.
Yeah,
this is the fearless leader's vote. All right, it carries more weight.
Oh, this is a democracy. Oh God, you want to take a Lions question or something a little farther out of field?
Well, let's stay on topic and go Lions.
Okay. All right. Well. Okay, so let's start with Smog's Gold Coin. I challenge you to make an argument for taking a tight end in the first round if he were to become available. So is that like a challenge, like we're doing it even though we don't believe in it? Because I don't think any of us believe in taking a tight end in the first round.
I think that's part of the challenge, right?
Sure. But he does go on the rest of his post, he is like talking about how he thinks Lions should take a tight end.
In the first round?
Yeah, because he says, I believe having O.J. Howard and Eric Ebron would make a lethal tight end duo.
Maybe he meant argument against them?
I mean, to his credit, like, there are a lot of tight end duos kind of showing up in schemes out there. I just don't think the Lions are set up for that.
Right, and check out the team that was supposed to have the most, the most impressive tight end, you know, dual threat, and that was the Patriots, and Martellus Bennett hasn't really lived up to that billing quite yet. Rob Gronkowski is injured now, and they're in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way that you could sell this fan base on drafting another tight end in the first round when we kind of have gotten to the point where we understand that tight end is a luxury, and this team does not need to purchase any more luxuries. We do not need another Lexus in the driveway.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing to me. It's like, we have far more pressing needs than trying to figure out another tight end.
That's true, but I think you could easily sell the fan base on it. I wouldn't do it, but I...
Drafting a tight end in the first round at 21st overall?
First of all, it's different than drafting 10th overall. Can we agree?
Yes, I can, because I was a fan of the Brandon Pettigrew, you know, draft pick, but yes. But we also didn't have an Eric Ebron on the team.
Right, but I think if we're selling this to a fan base who's currently extremely sour on Eric Ebron, and also on the last year of his contract, unless they decide to pick up his fifth year option, which they probably will, I think you could easily sell the fan base on it. I personally wouldn't do it, but I'm not ready to give up on Ebron. I still think he has a valuable role with this team. He didn't finish very well with the season. I'm more than happy to admit that. He has been a disappointment. Not to the level that I think a lot of people are saying, but he has been a disappointment. And like we were saying earlier in the podcast, this team definitely needs tight ends outside of him right now. So I would personally wait till like the third, fourth, fifth round, because I think a lot of people are saying this is a very deep tight end class.
Yeah, Mike Mayock, I know, at least has said it's like probably the deepest he's seen. So
right. But, you know, I honestly don't think a lot of Lions fans would be that mad to see them draft one in the first or second day.
I respectfully totally disagree.
Josh Farrington from Twitter asks, if a newcomer to the NFL was looking for a team to follow, what reasons would you give for supporting the Lions? So I know Josh from Twitter, he's saying this basically from the perspective of someone, he's a Lions fan in London.
Mm-hmm.
So like if you're trying to sell like someone from England or Britain or like even France or something on the idea of becoming a Lions fan, what are you giving them? What are you offering them? This is kind of like the reverse thing we see with a lot of Americans trying to pick up like a British team in like the Premier League or something.
I guess, I mean, it's a hard sell. Let's be honest. This is a very tortured fan base. You're going to go through some hardships as a fan, but I think I would just kind of point to teams like the Cavaliers and the Cubs. It's kind of a cheesy sell, but absence makes the heart grow fonder. So if this team eventually does turn it around and win a championship, this city is going to go fucking nuts, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And it's going to be a lot more fun than, you know, the Patriots winning their sixth Super Bowl in 12 years or whatever the hell it's going to be.
My argument is Africa. Who else is going to do that for you? We do it for you. We'll do it. We're great. We're fantastic. We can do that kind of stuff.
My argument, Ryan, my argument is that you could become a fan of a team that could potentially draft two tight ends in the first round within a 5-year span of each other.
For real, though, like this team, like just watch this season in general. Like there is no way this team is very ordinary. Like they will do things dumb or good to excite you.
You know what? I think, too, at the end of the day, I don't think that there would be too many people that would disagree with me if I make the statement that this is obviously a quarterback's league. We have one of the top 10 quarterbacks in football. And when he's on, he's really fun to watch.
Absolutely. All right. Let's see here. Next question. Kind of football related. Tomfoolery, what are the chances Green Bay just implodes for the foreseeable future?
As much as I'd love that to happen, it's not going to happen until Aaron Rodgers is gone. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's Aaron Rodgers.
He carried that entire team to where they were. The entire team. That defense was not good. That offensive line was not that good. And what else did they have? I mean, they were able to get to where they were without Jordy Nelson for a huge portion of the year. Yeah. I'm sorry, but Green Bay is going to be a perennial NFC North contender and probably the favorite until Aaron Rodgers goes away forever.
Yeah, and I mean, until they draft the heir apparent to Aaron Rodgers and then they just get a new quarterback who'd...
How many more times can they get lucky?
I don't know. I don't know. I've never not known them to be lucky when it comes to their quarterback. So, I mean, what do you want me to say?
Well, it was like the years before Brett Favre for me. Like, not, I mean, I don't
was not alive
remember
for
them
that.
Personally. Yeah, yeah, sure. No, I don't remember them personally, but I'm just saying, like, there was a time when the Packers were a doormat. It's just,
yeah, it was
you
the
know,
70s.
We just don't remember it.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. But you kind of, I mean, it's kind of the same situation with the Colts, right? Like, you forget what it's like before they had a really good quarterback. And it's just, yeah, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see because the Packers just don't do anything. Like they in free agency, like they draft well, but they don't do anything in free agency. At some point, that's going to collapse. It's going to backfire on them at some point. Next question. Yavit S19, names you won't mention. Seems like I've heard you guys talk on more than one occasion about certain names you won't mention on the podcast. What's the story behind this? Without mentioning any of the names, of course.
I think he's referring to some members of the media who we care not to give the attention to. Is that what that's in reference
no,
to?
No, I think he's talking about how Chris doesn't want to talk about
No, Jesus. You said it, I have to beep it. Yes, there is a certain Hall of Famer whose name we cannot say. He is a wide receiver,
88?
And we just number 88. That's the only clue we'll give you. But just he is a real, real, real gangster, and you don't want to mess with him. And yeah, I think no, Jeremy's right too. Sometimes we don't. We do mention certain things about the media with the publications out there, and we just don't want to bring up names because we don't want you guys snitching on us.
That and they don't deserve the attention, right? Like,
sure,
we want to yell at them without anyone knowing who they are, because we don't want people looking into why we're yelling at them, because we don't want them to have the attention, because that's what they're seeking, is the attention.
All right. Let's see here. I've got a few from my own personal Twitter that I wanted to get in here. Let's get one from my friend Megan at War Dang Meg. What Disney princess would Matthew Stafford be?
Unquestionably, he would be Mulan.
Mulan, huh?
Yeah.
No hesitation.
Why is that? Why is that?
Because Mulan always just struck me as the most badass Disney princess.
Oh, God. I don't know if I do. I'm a little caught off guard by this question.
Sleeping Beauty, for the way he shows up in the postseason.
Oh, you got him!
Oh!
I got nothing on this.
Oh, man, it's such a good question. I wish I have an answer for it.
I kind of fell off with all the Disney princesses after about, yeah, Mulan. Like, I wouldn't even, like, I want to say one of the newer ones, but I wouldn't even be able to tell you who.
How about Jasmine? She's kind of got that, like, she's mostly reserved, but sometimes she'll come out and, like, she'll yell at you. So, like, we saw Yelly Stafford this year a little bit.
And he does hang around with a giant cat.
Sure. What are you holding your mouth for, Ryan? What did I say?
What? Ryan, share it with the class. He is turning beet red.
No, you just compared Matthew Stafford to Jasmine because of how reserved he was, but now he's not because he's broken out of his shell. This is a great question. That's why I'm laughing.
Oh, that's you laughing. Okay. All right. Next question I have from here.
Hold on. Wait.
Yo.
I have something to say.
What? Okay, come on, say it.
In Mulan, there's that song, I'll Make a Man Out of You.
You must be swift as the coursing river, with all the force of a great typhoon.
That's perfect. That's the ode from Jim Bob Cooter to Matthew Stafford.
I think I'm going with Ryan's answer here. All right, Respected Madman asks, quick list cast of your favorite spicy condiments / additions, like jalapenos or black pepper. We're pretty late into this mailbag. I don't think we can do a list cast real quick on it, but I guess just real quick, what's your favorite?
Sriracha.
I'm just a regular.
That's pretty easy.
Would you say sriracha?
Sriracha.
Yeah. I was just gonna say hot sauce because I don't discriminate between hot sauces.
I definitely do. I definitely do, because the other day somebody, like, I was having lunch, and usually my lunches are pretty sad. They're just like yogurt and then a aluminum foil package thing of tuna. And I'll like try to like, you know, add some sort of flavor to it. And
got some hot sauce in your bag?
Of course I do. So I went this day. I did not have hot sauce in my bag because I looked in the fridge and all they had was Tabasco. And I was like, oh, I don't want to put Tabasco in it. They're like, why not? I was like, well, I like Frank's more than I like Tabasco sauce. They're different flavor profiles. And I caught so much crap for that. They're two complete different sauces.
They are. Yeah, I keep Tabasco around mostly for cooking. I don't think I've put it on a lot of my food unless I'm at Chipotle or something. My favorite is actually fresh jalapeno. Like real fresh jalapeno diced up.
Jalapeno on a pizza is so underrated.
It is. But you got to go fresh. You can't just get the pickled ones, because the pickled ones, usually they have like the seeds removed and everything. You got to get the jalapeno fresh, really hot. James asks, how much beer is it socially acceptable to drink before lunch on a weekday?
I wouldn't even know. I haven't had much to drink since Punta Cana, to be honest.
Oh no.
I didn't even drink on New Year's, but what's the answer to that question?
I think it probably depends on the kind of job you have.
Do you have to go back to work?
You're right.
Do you operate heavy machinery? Are you in charge of children? Are you a part of law enforcement?
I feel like I've got to answer this with another song with Alan Jackson. It's a 5 o'clock somewhere. Anytime, baby.
You're outside of my comfort zone right now.
Okay. Underdog asks, Saints Row or GTA?
GTA. No doubt.
I've never played Saints Row, so GTA.
Saints Row jumped the shark too much for me.
Got too wacky for you?
Yeah.
I can see that. I can appreciate that, yeah. Not like GTA is that serious either.
Oh, yeah.
It at least has some semblance of kind of, yeah.
Right, and I totally get it. I mean, there's definitely a lane for that, and they fill it well. It's just not for me.
All right, D. Walk at No Pictures asks, if you had to replace Stafford with a non-playoff quarterback next year, who would it be?
I mean, if we're talking about non-playoff this year.
Yeah, this year, I guess, yeah.
It's Andrew Luck, right? It has to be.
No.
Cam Newton wasn't a playoff quarterback this year.
I don't care. I would take Andrew Luck over Cam Newton.
Hater.
Really?
Yeah.
Hater.
Really?
Cam Newton had one good year.
Oh, cut it out.
I'm not kidding.
Cut it out.
He had one good year.
Don't say one. Oh, he had a good year. He was the MVP of the league last year, you jag off, and he took his team to the Super Bowl.
I like what Cam Newton brings to the table more than Andrew Luck. I just do. What about you, Ryan?
Wait, hold on. So would I just get him for 1 year next year?
I think so. I think that's kind of the gist is only 1 year. Let's just make it know. 1 year. 1 year, you got to win
okay.
something. So.
Drew Brees.
Okay. Yeah, that might change my answer a bit.
Yeah.
I was going, you're replacing him for good, but... Yeah, Drew Brees is a good answer.
I got a better answer for instead of Andrew Luck. If we're going to replace Matthew Stafford for good for the next few years. Kirk Cousins.
I knew you were going to
say
like
that. You like that?
Ooh-wee.
You like that?
Ooh-wee.
What about Sam Bradford?
No, not Sam Bradford.
Might as well go with Jared Goff.
I was very upset that I couldn't answer Mark Sanchez with this question. Got further in the playoffs than Matthew Stafford.
Yeah, I mean, shoot.
Settle down.
If we were going with playoff quarterbacks, I would just go Jake Rudock.
You say incendiary shit, and you wonder why I dread coming on to this every Monday.
You love it.
I kid, I love it.
GV42, is Tom Brady the GOAT? If not, who is?
He has to be.
I think it's Peyton Manning. I'm sorry. I think Peyton Manning does more for his team than Tom Brady does for the Patriots.
Is this going to be like the new generation's Marino or Montana? It's going to be Brady or Manning?
Maybe, but hold on. What the hell just happened to Jeremy? He was full on heel and now he's... What is going on? He's advocating for Jake Rudock, and he's being a little twerpy heel, but all of a sudden now he wants to flip and say that, I don't know, Peyton Manning had a lot of regular season success.
Jesus.
Do you disagree with my point on Peyton Manning? Let's put the Jake Rudock stuff behind me.
7 Super Bowl appearances.
So so QB wins matters to you.
To an extent. Kind of. Hold on. They matter. Hold on. They matter in the sense that whenever Peyton and Brady were meeting in AFC playoffs, like, there was clearly one guy who had the other guy rattled.
One team that had the other team rattled, I agree.
I don't know. I think that Peyton Manning had Peyton Manning had a history of kind of shrinking in big games.
I never bought into that. I really didn't.
You don't believe in momentum, that's why.
I don't believe in hurting quarterbacks for the fact that their stats usually are worse against better teams, because that's universal.
I mean, the Patriots defense isn't all that great this year by DVOA standards. No.
But, I mean, do we have to talk about, like, how this Patriots team can succeed with anybody at any position at any time? Like, they're 3-1 with a third-string quarterback this year. They managed to make... God, I can't even think of his
Jacoby
name.
Jacoby Brissett.
No, I'm talking about a couple years ago when
Matt Cassell.
Matt Cassell.
Matt Cassell.
You call him Cassell.
Oh, get off it. You keep calling Glover Quinn, so.
Do I?
Yeah, number one Lions fan.
I think the GOAT isn't Brady or Peyton Manning.
No. I know where this is going.
It is.
John C.
Like, come on, though. Like, the 07 Patriots, like, a 30-year-old Randy Moss, Tom Brady had the best offensive season ever.
I'm just talking about the position, man. Like,
he threw 50 touchdowns.
He did, but, like...
He had 8 picks.
I don't see what he does so phenomenally that Peyton can't do.
His quarterback rating was 117.2.
But tell me... Don't show me a stat.